T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update comes from One Bills Drive. The tournament continues. It is day 2 of the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament. Couple of games in progress in the second half. 7th seed Cincinnati leads 10th seed Iowa 59-58.
Come on, Cincy.
Also in the second half, it is 9th seed Oklahoma on top of 8th seed Ole Miss 66-48. Reaction from Chris Brown.
That one's over.
And this one in the first half, third seed Texas Tech leading 14 seed Northern Kentucky 17-13. There's a bunch of games coming up later, including the UB Bulls. The men's basketball Bulls take on Arizona State. 4 o'clock today, the game on TNT. The meeting will feature current UB head coach Nate Oates against his predecessor, Bobby Hurley, who spent 2 years as head coach at Buffalo. UB with 31 wins going into the tournament, tied with Houston for the best record in the nation. Arizona State got to this game by beating St. John's Wednesday night in a first four matchup. UB and Arizona State tips off about 4 o'clock today, that game on TNT. The UB women tip off about 30 minutes later, tentatively scheduled. They're in Storrs, Connecticut. The 10th seed UB women play number 7 seed Rutgers later this afternoon, the second MAC championship team in UB history. Buffalo making its third trip in 4 seasons to the NCAA Women's Basketball Championship. Here at One Bills Drive, a free agent visit reportedly. Tight end Jake Fisher scheduled to visit the Bills, work out for the Bills today, according to ESPN. He was in Washington yesterday. Second round pick of the Bengals in 2015 as a tackle, now moving back to tight end. Indianapolis Colts signed former Kansas City Chiefs linebacker Justin Houston late yesterday. A 4-time Pro Bowler gets a 2-year deal to play with Indianapolis. We're going to talk about officiating coming up. NFL's competition committee with 2 versions of a modified expansion of instant replay that will go before owners this weekend at the owners' meetings in Arizona. And the Buffalo Sabres head out for a 3-game road trip after practice today. Starts tomorrow night in Montreal. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy with Chris Brown. Chris is in for Steve Tasker, who returns on Monday, talking about the NFL, about the Bills, and about NFL owners meeting this weekend. It starts Sunday in Arizona. Joining us on the line right now, the Football Zebras editor-in-chief, Football Zebras website that deals with NFL officiating issues and rules issues. He's the author of the book, So You Think You Know Football. Longtime guest for us, good buddy of ours, Ben Ostro, on the line with us. Ben, John Murphy and Chris up here in Buffalo, thanks for coming on.
Oh, good to be with you again.
I got to say, I am surprised, Ben, that they're talking at least about expanding replay. I thought the commissioner at the Super Bowl in his State of the Game speech made a compelling argument for holding back on expanding replay, but apparently that's not what the competition committee heard, huh?
Well, in this case, you've had the competition committee pretty much holding back any effort to expand replay into penalties, into, you know, whether or not a foul is, and, you know, with the exception of 12 men, which is, you know, that's a pretty objective call to make. But anything else, you're starting to get into a subjective area. And there have been proposals, there have been dozens of proposals over the last 5 years, especially, you know, teams that want to get, you know, certain fouls or all fouls reviewable, and they keep getting declined. So when the competition committee comes around and suggests that, hey, maybe we'll put for 1 year only, maybe we'll put pass interference into that, maybe we'll put roughing quarterback or defenseless hit in there. When you start to see that they change their course after, what, 20 years of the challenge system that we've been under, that does take some notice, of course.
Yeah, and as you, I think you tweeted it out today, or at least Football Zebras tweeted out, that they're ready to open Pandora's box, it appears, right, once you go down this road, isn't it?
Well, in this particular case, as we understand the way they're going to enforce this, is that it would be to reverse a foul. So in the case of a long-distance defensive pass interference, you have an instance where you can actually pull that back and say, all right, look, there was no contact that was on that play, and then maybe reverse a 30-yard foul. But then in that case, what you wind up doing is you're now saying, well, if we're going to pick up a flag, why can't we put one down? Why can't we check to see if somebody moved off the line or if they were off the line of scrimmage by half a yard and there's an illegal formation or something of that nature? And we'll throw the play clock in there. So it just becomes, where does this stop? Are you going to start looking at all of these little technical elements and, you know, probably negate a lot of good plays based on whether or not could you perceive something that could be a foul when on the field, using some official sense, they said, well, in this case, that's not a foul.
Well, these proposals this year are going eight ways to Sunday. I mean, because now they want to add, Kansas City proposed a rule to add review of personal fouls as plays that coaches can challenge, you know, and then Philadelphia wants to add all scoring plays and turnovers that were negated by a foul on the play to be subject to automatic review. All fourth down plays by Denver for proper spotting on the field. I mean, we do remember that there is human error involved in officiating, right?
Well, and I think we've seen it too, so there's that. But seven of the nine proposals that come from teams are tinkering with replay. And I think that because the competition committee has advanced their own proposal in the replay area, I think that effectively knocks out all of the other proposals because you can't be adding one in one area and one in another area because there could be some overlap. There could be some conflicting ways as to how one proposal affects the other. So I think it's just going to be the competition committee's proposal that has any chance. And it's possible that it does get turned down. They did pick up one thing from Denver's proposal, which was to replay a missed two-point conversion, which I think kind of closes a loophole because there's certain situations where you could miss a two-point conversion and still have it under the replay official in some cases where it's not. And because of that, it's just easier to keep it consistent and say all two-point conversions, whether they're made or missed, are reviewable.
And that goes under the heading of all scoring plays are immediately reviewable, right? That's why that makes sense to me anyway, Ben, right?
Right. So if it's a made two-point conversion, it's a scoring play. If it's missed, it's not a scoring play. But if there happens to be a turnover in that, Now it becomes automatically reviewable. So it adds situations where it is and it isn't reviewable, and this kind of makes it consistent, especially since it is an extension of the scoring play.
Ben Ostrer, our guest, he is editor-in-chief of footballzebras.com. Ben, is it important to make the distinction between what the competition committee proposes and the various team proposals that Chris talked about a minute ago? Isn't it true that the competition committee proposals are the ones more likely to get approval from the owners?
I think, we did a quick look, and I think it was over 95%. Of the proposals that come from the competition committee for playing rules. There's other things with bylaws and stuff like that, but for the playing rules, it's a 95% approval rate for the competition committee, and it's probably less than 10% that's for the teams. And a lot of these things are retreads of things that have been tried before. Washington's throwing in a whole bunch of things. In fact, there was something that actually failed last year, and they're reinstituting it this year again. So, these are things that we see the same teams throwing out the similar proposals year after year, and they keep getting turned down.
And as far as replay, it's important to note, I think, also that the proposal that the competition committee has come up with to review pass interference calls would have absolutely no application at all on a situation like the NFC Championship game last year because there was no call, right? They won't review no calls.
So in that case, so we initially think it's a knee-jerk reaction to that play, but it would not be reviewable under because there's no pass interference flag. There was no helmet-to-helmet hit flag, so we can't review that. But had they thrown a flag on that, then it would be reviewable to only pick it up. And then the third thing is that the competition committee was told by Troy Vincent, the executive vice president of football operations, to look at the AAF's model of using a sky judge, this kind of position where you can kind of look over and make some minor corrections. And the competition committee unanimously turned that down. No one was in favor of that. So, you know, at least for another year, something like that where there's like a backstop, they're not in favor of that particular situation.
If there's one rule that I'm hoping does pass, and maybe you can assess the likelihood of this, Ben, but allowing each team to have a possession in overtime, regardless of whether or not the team that possesses it first scores a touchdown, which was an incident we saw crop up in the AFC title game between Kansas City and New England, where the game was over after New England won the coin toss, went down the field and scored. What do you think is the likelihood of that kind of passing and getting through?
I think there's less of a move towards allowing a team to go down by a touchdown and giving them a second chance. The field goal thing, I still even, I'm going back to, you know, you play yourself, you play your defense, and some of what we're hearing is that, yeah, they still want to emphasize the defense, but you know, give that little bit, you know, so that you don't get a 50-yard field goal and, okay, so they did pull it out, even though the defense did knuckle down. So I don't see that there's much interest in adding two guaranteed possessions regardless of what happens on the first one.
Is that do you think that's rooted in players' concern for player safety and not lengthening the game anymore, or is there another impetus there?
That's part of it, but, you know, even today, the comments that came from Troy Vincent on the conference call with reporters, he was saying, you know, you've got to play defense. So I don't think that the competition committee is really too behind this. And when it comes to an owner's vote, Kansas City's got to be the one to back it. They're not going to get the competition committee to present this. So, you know, they have to do that. And they also have other parts to that same proposal that they have to do. One of them being preseason overtime, which I, as much as we would like to get rid of it, that does admit that the preseason games don't count as much as the regular season games, and then it makes it harder to charge full price for those preseason tickets.
It makes it follows that proposal on overtime. It was proposed by the Chiefs, you said, right, Ben?
That was proposed by the Chiefs.
Yeah, they almost probably felt obligated to try to do something, but
well, what they should do, I guess, is improve their defense.
Exactly. Yeah, try there. It's important to know too, Ben, that the numbers don't back up the belief that the team that wins a overtime coin toss is going to win. What did I see? Only 20% of overtimes have ended on the opening drive. The receiving team, the team that wins the toss, gets the ball, wins 48% of the time. The kickoff team wins 45% of the time. Those numbers don't back up the belief in some quarters that if you lose the overtime coin toss, you're going to lose the game, right?
Yeah, and there's not very many. You know, we've backed it down to 10 minutes of overtime in the regular season, so you know, you're going to get less snaps in as it is. So, you know, there is some urgency to move along. And, you know, so you're not going to have multiple possessions anyway. So, you know, you're probably going to see, you know, teams that are going to push it a little more, knowing that they're probably not going to get the ball back. But, yeah, it doesn't happen too terribly often. It still is that first possession is surrendered in some way. And there's not that that field goal, and even at that, I think since they've implemented the rule, I mean, there's been less than 20 of the overtimes that went into you know, into that extended possession because of the first possession field goal.
Ben Osler,
it
our
just
guest.
Doesn't happen too often.
Right.
And I'm a purist, and I like to go back to sudden death.
Sure,
that's me.
Yeah, that's you. Ben Osler, our guest, Football Zebras editor in chief. There's a Denver Broncos proposal that Chris and I were kind of bouncing around this morning, which I kind of like, Ben. And I think this is what they do in the Alliance now. But it's a limited proposal for in place of an onside kick, one time a game, fourth quarter only, you could run the fourth down play, fourth and 15 from your own 35-yard line. I like that rule. Chris, did you tell me you like that one too? Right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate it. I understand it's harder than ever to recover the football now in onside kicks just by virtue of the fact that you know, I mean, I still remember the Bobby April kamikaze play that he used to line up all his players behind the kicker, who would then quickly scoot up to the ball, pooch it, and then there'd be a pile of people running to get the ball. And obviously that flew in the face of player safety, so
right.
they got rid of it. And I get it, but what it's done in turn is made it harder to recover an onside kick. I mean, you got to get the right bounce, you got to get the right guy with hands, and you got to get a lucky bounce. And I understand that's all by chance, but it would seem to me that with a lot of teams, pretty pretty proficient on offense with a good quarterback would rather take their chances there and get a first down on a 4th-and-15 situation at their own 35 than to just kick the ball and leave it up to chance to a large degree. What do you think the chances are, Ben, about that one?
I definitely think it's interesting. And, you know, we've seen this in various ways ever since Greg Schiano opposed that when he was the coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And, you know, last year with the formation changes being even more entrenched in the kickoff, more restrictions as to how much of a running start you get, the onside kick has really been constrained significantly. So, you know, you get a one-yard running start. It is not the same as it was when it was 5 yards. And then the players are spread out further, and it must be balanced on opposite sides of the kicker. Right. So, you know, there's less chance of converting it. So I do think that this one, where they give you one chance to do this per game, where you can, you know, go for a 4th-and-15, I think it has a possibility. But, I mean, it just seems to be such a drastic change. I'm not sure that the owners have an appetite for making that big of a change right away. It probably would be something they look at, you know, in preseason, maybe try it in a few games, see a few AAF games to see if they implement that in any of their games and see how that works out. Because even at that, you have a penalty. We're looking at this. You have a penalty on that 4th-and-15.
Yeah.
You can't go back and say, well, we'll kick it instead. You're now 4th-and-25, 4th-and-30, whatever it is.
Unless it's pass interference, and they pass that rule to review pass interference, and then you can do that and review that, and then, bang, you get another play again.
Oh, my head hurts.
Yeah, right. And on the pass interference thing, Ben, it's important to know, and you pointed it out, it's on paper a 1 year experiment. Typically those become the rule, right? After a while, I think it's going to happen this year with kickoff rules, right? If they experiment with something for a year, the chances are they're going to keep that, right?
It happens. There's sometimes where that doesn't happen. There was the most recent one that I can remember off the top of my head was a proposal for the opening the roof at halftime on a retractable roof stadium. They tried it for 1 year and said, "Nah, you know, we're not gonna continue this." So it does happen. You know, the first generation of replay was only done in 1 year increments, and eventually that didn't pass. So it's not a done deal, but a lot of times, once they try this out, and if it goes the way that they had written it up on paper, which it usually does, then that becomes a permanent change.
Yeah. And one more question I have for you, Ben. If this, I start to think, you know, because it's a competition committee proposal, because it's, you know, it's scaled down to 1 year, at least on a trial basis, I think about, you know, the Bill Polian always talks about unintended consequences. Do you think making replay or making pass interference reviewable might lead to more flags being thrown if the official thinks, gee, that's close, there's some contact there, I'm going to throw the flag and let somebody else decide this, knowing that they can't do that for
a
no-call. If you can't review a no-call, so if there's any doubt, they might just throw the flag, right? Let somebody else pick it.
And that certainly does come into the equation, because you do have situations where, you know, are you going to rule towards a score, no score? Are you going to give a team a cheap score? You know, you're going to say, all right, well, we'll let this run to its conclusion because it is in that gray area, and I don't have the best look on that. And so, you know, you would default to a position where, you know, this is recoverable in replay, or in this particular case where, you know, if the flag is down, then it certainly can be picked up. And so then what you do is you wind up broadening what pass interference becomes, you know, what draws the flag. And I think that in the championship game, we saw that eased up a little bit because we saw two, you know, the big call, but then there was also one earlier in the game where, you know, we were expecting to see a flag and it wasn't. So that tends to lead to a consistency to back off of pass interference. So that is certainly something that's been bounced around in the competition committee, and I'm sure the owners are going to say, well, is this going to lead to more flags? And then when it does lead to more flags, does it lead to most of these? Well, it stands. And that's what we wind up seeing a lot of the time is they'll say, well, we'll go with what the official said on the field. Well, the official's saying, well, we'll see it in replay. And so it becomes a vicious circle there. Yeah.
Some of us think scoring plays go that way sometimes. They call a scoring play figuring, I don't know, I'm not sure, I'm going to let the replay decide this.
It can. When it gets that close, you know, you kind of just look at it and you try and make your sense of it. And if it's clearly not short, then you say, well, you know what, it looks like a score to me, and I'm going to go with it. And then, you know, maybe replay has a better look at it.
Yeah. Hey, Ben, thanks. You good, Chris?
I'm good.
Thanks, Ben. Great talking with you again. How's the book going?
Book is doing well, and I've actually started gathering from some notes for version 2. So.
Probably do. Yeah. Thank you, Ben. Good to talk with you again.
Same here. Take care.
Ben Ostro is the author of the book, So You Think You Know Football. You can find out information about his book at his website, footballzebras.com. He is editor-in-chief of footballzebras.com.
You know, the one thing we didn't cover with him was the proposal by Kansas City, which is proposal number 11, to add, you know, I mentioned, you know, adding review of personal fouls as plays subject to coaches' challenges in the instant replay process. Do you know what that's got to be stemming from? All the flags we saw for illegal contact with the quarterback or personal foul roughing the passer. I mean, how many times did we see that this past year where you're like, well, I don't think he hit him in the helmet at all. And, or, you know, they interpreted the guy dropped his weight on the quarterback as he took him to the ground. And I see that as a blatant attempt by the coaches to challenge that and say, he didn't take him to the ground. That isn't a personal foul. And blah, that isn't roughing the quarterback. I got to believe that that's where that one's emanating from.
Read me the rule proposal again, if you would, Chris.
To add review of personal fouls called or not called on the field.
Yeah.
As plays subject to the coach's challenge, they want to add that they want to give coaches the ability to challenge those plays. I think Kansas City should have phrased this by Kansas City on behalf of Clay Matthews. that's how it should have been phrased in its presentation. Maybe a little bit of humor might have got it through. Who knows?
Well, the owners will meet Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, maybe a little bit Wednesday, I think, in Arizona. It sounds like, according to Ben and according to what we've read, that the slight expansion of replay to include pass interference on a one-year basis might be the most likely candidate to pass. But I don't know. I'm not a replay fan. I don't want to see any expansion of replay. As I said to Ben right at the top of the interview, I'm discouraged and a little surprised because based on what the commissioner said at his, what was it, Thursday news conference at the Super Bowl, I thought they'd kind of put this all to bed. Like, hey, don't be looking for us to change the replay rule. We're not going to expand it.
It might have been too close in the rearview mirror, though. It was only 2 weeks removed from that happening. I'm just a little more surprised that it doesn't sound, based on Troy Vincent's comments on the conference call this morning, that they're going to change the overtime stuff and give each team a possession regardless of what happens with the team that has the ball first.
You don't need that.
Yeah, well.
Play defense.
I understand, but, you know, in a I'm just surprised that in a league that has skewed its rules to push scoring would shy away from an opportunity to score again. You know what I mean? Like back and forth kind of scoring type of deal that we see so often in the college overtime system, which, you know, a lot of people say is exciting. And on top of that, the college game typically lasts far longer than a regulation NFL game just because the clock stops more often. There are more plays run. They have a longer overtime system than the NFL does.
I don't like college overtime, do you?
You don't like it? It's exciting. I think,
it's kind of
people love scoring.
Exciting. Yeah, I know. But it's not football anymore, you know? Field position no longer a consideration. Defense really not a consideration.
Yeah.
Special teams out the window.
Who
it's
can score?
Not a football game.
It's like their version of a shootout in hockey,
right.
I guess.
I don't like it. I don't like shootouts.
Don't like it.
Yep. A break. When we come back, let's talk more about Bills and Jets. Who's more ready to compete for a wild card spot? We're getting a lot of pushback on people saying, why are you talking wild card? I get that. We'll talk about that, too. Give us a call. Phone line's open, 803-0550. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. Chris Brown is with us. One Bills Live, presented by Collada Health from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the show. We got about a half hour left. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy with Chris Brown, Bills Insider from BuffaloBills.com. What's coming up on the website? What do you got going on there, Chris?
We got some feature stories coming up. We had one on Andre Roberts today. We had one the other day on who was the other free agent we did a piece on?
Tyler Croft. Yeah, I read that one.
So, yeah, we're kind of making our way through a lot of the new additions.
I'm writing something over the weekend.
Yep. For the website. I've got a roster assessment coming up here because in the wake of free agency, people kind of want to know what the numbers are at all the positions, and we kind of make an assessment there and where they still have some work to do in terms of shaping this roster. I think there's about 65 players on the roster right now. Obviously, the offseason roster limit is 90, so there's room to do some work. So we kind of like pinpoint based on numbers alone and a couple other factors as to where they might add. That'll be up tomorrow on the website for some weekend reading enjoyment.
I'm going to write something over the weekend for the website about the Bills' long-term planning and all these free agent decisions. You know what I mean? And the draft. But how much of a the Bills' approach in free agency got a lot of positive notice around the league, right? But as we pointed out, and it deals with our thing today, it's not because they, boom, they signed this guy, boom, they signed that guy. It's how they manage their resources cap-wise, and I think how they looked at the big picture long-term as opposed to just trying to get better right away.
So, slow build.
Yeah, which gets us to today's Twitter poll. We've been talking about it all day. We have time to hear from you on this. Bills and Jets. We choose them because the Jets were very active in free agency, as were the Bills in terms of the number of people signed. What do you think? Which team, the Bills or the Jets, is more ready to compete for a wild card spot? Phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. A lot of good response on this. Most people responding to our show, Bills Show, say the Bills are more ready to compete for a wild card spot. 86%. 14%, that's all, say the Jets. Give us a call. Let's talk about it. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. From the tweet sheet, a couple of interesting responses. T-Manny22 responds, I'm going Bills, and it's not a homer pick. Very similar teams, in my opinion, but the biggest difference to me is a whole new coaching staff in New York versus same head coach and coordinators returning for the Bills also give a slight edge to Allen over Darnold. Well, how many people would, outside of Buffalo, would give an edge to Josh Allen over Sam Darnold after their rookie year? It'd be close, but I have a feeling that Darnold is held in higher esteem around the league. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, due in part to the fact that he was a more highly touted prospect
right, with
a more highly touted future in this league, and I think they felt that his mechanics were stronger. And so what does that translate into? I think a lot of people are of the opinion that he is the quarterback who's going to make more plays more consistently based on that. Whether it's a right or a wrong assessment, that's, I believe, the general consensus around the league about Darnold. So,
and part of what you're saying is Darnold came in with a better reputation
exactly
as a prospect than Josh
exactly
Allen. And that sticks with him a little bit.
Yeah, and Josh came in, and the general consensus on him was super talented but raw prospect. Now, people in Buffalo might disagree with that too, but that's what the talk was and probably still is to some degree around the league until Josh effectively and capably proves otherwise. And that's the next step in his game that he's got to take.
We got an angry tweet. I don't have it in front
angry
of me.
Angry tweet.
From yesterday or the day before. I think it was yesterday. Somebody tweeted in, included us, I guess you and me.
All right, let's lump it in. Yeah.
And the folks at our flagship radio station said, why aren't you guys talking about Josh Rosen for the Buffalo Bills, now that it appears he might be available? All of you guys were all about Josh Rosen a year ago, both before and after the draft. Not true. Some of us, I would include me in this camp, thought that Josh Allen was a better prospect, and we're glad the Bills drafted Josh Allen and not Josh Rosen. But it's a legitimate question. Josh Rosen could be available in a trade. If you liked him a year ago in this good quarterback class of 2018, don't you like him anymore after 1 year?
Well, I think here's the dichotomy that you're working with. Josh Allen and Josh Rosen are two completely different quarterbacks. So if you're planning to build around one, I think how you build around them is a bit different than how you build around the other. I mean, Rosen's strictly a pocket quarterback, no mobility really to speak of. Allen is something quite different, something a player that offers you a read option attack, a player that obviously can extend plays better than Rosen can. So what kind of running backs are you drafting? Are you drafting running backs that are supremely efficient in pass protection if you have Rosen? Yes. Is that as big a requirement or a priority in a running back if you have Josh Allen? Probably not, just because of his escapability. what kind of offensive linemen do you need? Do you need mobile guys? Do you need guys that can stand in there and grind and keep the pocket clean? I mean, there's a whole bunch of different dynamics impacted by what the skill set of your quarterback is.
But I would submit none of that changed in the last year. We knew that about each of them a year ago, didn't we?
Right. I'm saying as it pertains to the Bills and the build that you're trying to put together here.
I got you.
I think it changes the dynamics of the type of players you're going to insert to put around him. Not necessarily from a wide receiver standpoint, because it's the quarterback's job to deliver the football. But I'm saying from, you know, maybe an offensive line standpoint, you know, and you know, the guys behind him, those kinds of things. I think there is an impact that is there. And when you have two quarterbacks that are completely different, you know, trying to fit them both, you know, on the same roster, I think is a little misguided.
Which team most ready to compete for a wild card spot, Jets or Bills? We've got GoldenEye61 who tweets this in. With Josh Allen going into his second year in the system and the support we've added around him, we, Bills, are in better shape to take the next step. That and the questions about the how the Jets coaches will change their schemes this year, I think that makes us the better playoff contender. And one more from Bills Mafia House. Who's better? Who's ready to compete? More ready to compete, Bills or Jets? Bills Mafia House answer. Overpaying for a running back who's sat out a year and was previously behind one of the best O-lines in the game does not scream helping out a young quarterback to me. Yeah, there are legitimate questions. You're right about that, Bills Mafia House. You can ask legitimate questions about Le'Veon Bell. We've asked him this week over Rich Cimini. I think it was yesterday, and I said, rust? Is that a factor? Cimini wrote it. He said, you got to think there might be something there, right?
Well, it's not only rust. He's going to be running behind a whole new group of people, and he's going to be doing it in a different scheme. So I think there's a bit of a learning curve that's going to have to happen there. And, yeah, there'll be some rust to knock off. Just getting – I mean, getting readjusted to the speed of the game probably takes a player with his experience maybe a half. You know what I mean? Speed of the game, fine. He can get back to that pretty quickly. But he's got a whole new bunch of people he's got to read in front of him. And, you know, he's known as a patient runner who's going to wait. He's got to get used to those guys too. I think that's the same thing. So I agree. I think it's a wait and see on him. I mean, there's no denying he's a supreme rushing talent, but it's not going to shock me if it takes him a little time to get back up to the level of production that he had in Pittsburgh. And let's not forget either that there aren't people like Juju Smith-Schuster and Antonio Brown stretching the field and keeping that extra safety out of the box for the Jets on offense either. Yep. I mean, Quincy Enunwa was a nice receiver, but are you taking Quincy Enunwa or Juju or Antonio? I mean, I don't even think that's a conversation. So you have that dynamic as well. So he's probably going to be staring down the barrel of a lot of eight-man boxes.
Let's take a couple of phone calls here. Bob in West Seneca. Go ahead, Bob. You're on the air.
Hey, hey guys. How you doing? Make it
great.
I'm giving the Bills a slight edge because of the upgrade at receiving. Receiving core with the two new guys, because I just feel it's going to help Josh quite a bit. And another thing, too, real quick, I was just wondering, if any of you guys got some juice with the NFL, call and make that the final game of the season, the Bills versus the Jets. Finally, both of these teams get New England's number. They beat them once each at home. Now they're playing the Bills and the Jets for first place in the division in the final game of the season.
That'd be fun.
Take care. Have a nice day.
Thanks very much, Bob. That'd be fun. Schedule, I asked you yesterday, schedule comes out typically, a week and a half before the draft?
Usually, yeah.
So we're still looking at April 15th, somewhere around there for the schedule. And I don't have any juice with the NFL, Bob, so I can't.
not me.
Thanks for your call. Let's take a call here from Alan in Buffalo. Hello, Alan.
Hey, how's it going there?
Okay.
Okay, my question is, what are we going to do about a backup quarterback?
We're here?
Tight end. Yeah, hello?
Backup quarterback for the Bills?
Yeah, backup quarterback for the Bills, a starting tight end. What are we going to do about Ziggy? We need him.
Okay, thanks, Alan.
Which one do you want to take, Murph?
The easiest one is backup quarterback. The quarterback room is set with Derek Anderson and Matt Barkley. Take your pick. I guess Barkley's the backup. What other one can I dispatch with? Ziggy, nothing's happened now. It's over a week since he visited here. He hasn't signed anywhere, which I guess is a good thing. I don't know that they need him. I really don't know that they need him. And obviously there's a difference of opinion, you would think, on how much benefit he would have to the Bills or New Orleans or wherever else he's talked, because he's yet to sign a contract.
Yeah.
Tight end, starting tight end. That's a better question.
I think
that's the best of the three.
I think that is a position that still needs to be addressed. You only have two on the roster, so I think it's a very strong likelihood that they draft one somewhere. It's hard to ascertain whether it's going to happen early, middle, or late. And then they still may try to get some kind of veteran blocking tight end in here. You know, somebody that can handle that duty on a full-time basis in short yardage situations,
visitor
guy you can
today.
Count on. Yeah, I mean, Jake Fisher is a perfect example. You know, the free agent who used to be an offensive tackle and is trying to reinvent himself as a full-time tight end. He's been a sixth offensive lineman in Cincinnati for a long time in certain rundown situations. So that's a potential option, I suppose. But, yeah, they're going to have to add to the tight end position. The thing with Ziggy Ansah is this. I think people see that he visited and they're thinking, oh, they're already talking contract. I don't think it ever got that far. Based on some of Brandon Bean's comments to us when we asked him directly on this show and in a couple of other media forums, it sounds as though this was purely an exploratory visit in the terms of where is he at in his recovery from shoulder surgery. I think they want to know, is he ready now? What's the timetable? And let their own physicians make an assessment as to when Ansah is going to be 100% healthy to play football. I think that's really what that visit was all about. And there are other teams doing the same thing because he's had more than one shoulder injury in his career. He had a shoulder surgery his rookie season, and now he's had another one. And with pass rushers, that's one that is going to draw eyeballs and throw up red flags. So you do, it's part of doing your due diligence on a player who's unquestionably talented but has been beset by injuries each of the last three seasons. So to me, this is a do-your-homework kind of visit. That's what it was last week for the Bills. I don't think it was about talking contract, at least not yet. I think later in the offseason, let's just say after the draft, let's just say the Bills don't get what they want in terms of an edge rusher to add to the defense in the draft, then they might be on the phone with Ziggy Ansah at that point in time, see if his rehab is still on schedule. And now they have the medical assessment from their own doctors that they gathered last week that they can refer to in determining, well, what's his value to us?
Doesn't appear to be any urgency on either side, or for that matter, from any team in the NFL to get
Ziggy. Which leads me to believe that Ziggy Ansah knows he's not ready yet either.
Right. You might have a better chance in June.
Right, when he's healthy.
Yeah. Thanks for your call. We're going to take a break. We're coming back. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Okay, so what have we learned from today's show presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills? We had new Bills offensive lineman Adrian Waddle on the show. Back in the first hour of the show, offensive tackle came over from the Patriots, but he reunites with some coaches he's had in the past here with the Buffalo Bills, including Bobby Johnson, Buffalo's new offensive line coach who he had with the Lions. Adrian Waddle says it's good to get back with coaches that he's worked with in the past.
I think it, you know, it factored in a little bit. You know, me and Bobby have a great relationship, and, you know, I have a great relationship with Hef, too, the assistant O-line coach. And, you know, Daboll's over here, too. He's the OC. I've worked with him over in New England. So, you know, I have a good relationship with those guys. And, you know, it's always nice to, you know, have some kind of familiarity, you know, with a little change of scenery.
Yeah.
So that definitely played into it. You know, me and those guys are real cool, and I look forward to working with them.
A lot to like about Adrian Waddle. We enjoyed our conversation with him earlier on today. Also on the show today is regular Friday spot, Greg Cosell, executive producer, analyst for NFL Matchup on ESPN, longtime senior producer at NFL Films. He is deep into his draft preparation now. He spent a lot of time on the wide receivers, and we asked him about the ideal wide receiver the Bills could get this year in the NFL draft.
Yeah, I would think the Bills would be looking for some size, because right now they have John Brown, Cole Beasley, and Foster, so they don't have any size. So I would think that the Bills would be, you know, I mean, I guess they have Zay Jones as well, and he's pretty big, but I think in this particular group, I'd be anxious to see how he gets used, but I think they would love to get a big outside receiver. And then it depends on who you like. You know, maybe they like N'Keal Harry. Maybe they like, yeah, I don't know who they like, but I would think, Murph, that they'd be looking for some size at the wide receiver position at this point.
Greg Cosell. You know what struck me, Brownie, about Greg Cosell's entire litany of receiving talent that he went through with us today? there's a variety of body types, a variety of skill sets. Whatever the Bills want, they're going to be able to get some kind of a receiver who can probably help and play in the NFL, not necessarily in the first or even second round. There's some talent there with, like I said, just a wide variety of different types of receivers, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, and that's why I don't think the Bills are going to get married to we have to get a receiver with size, because there are some darn good ones in this draft that aren't 6'3" and 220 pounds. There are some that are good that are that size and that weight, but I don't think the Bills are the type that are going to pigeonhole themselves into a specific kind of receiver. Obviously, if the value matches where they're picking, yes. And if there's a tie between two players that are different in the measurable standpoint, then yes, they'll do that. But there's a lot of other receivers in this draft that aren't gigantic who are pretty darn good. I mean, you got the Ohio State kids who can run like the wind, and you got the Deebo Samuel kid who we mentioned who's not 6 feet tall, but man, can run over people. So there are going to be a lot of good options.
Hey, looking ahead over the weekend, as we said, we already talked about what's coming up on the website, buffalobills.com. Early next week, we'll have personnel at the NFL meetings in Phoenix, Arizona, and we'll have coverage of comments coming out early in the week from head coach Sean McDermott. We think general manager Brandon Bean is going to speak, right? And maybe even ownership at the owners' meetings, plus
yes.
the coverage of the rules
and Coach
changes.
Coach McDermott as well.
Yeah, yeah. So that those stuff to look for on the website and
yep.
on this show early next week, right?
We will have it all covered.
Yep. All right. Hey, Chris, thanks for this. Thanks for pitching in. Steve.
Always Tasker, fun to be here, Murph. Always fun to be
fun
here.
Was enough fun for you?
Enough.
Yeah.
Enough.
Too much
I expected a little
fun.
Bit more, but
Me
it was
too.
Enough.
Last week was really fun. With
that
all
was
the free
good.
Agents.
It was wild.
It got quiet here this week.
That was wild.
Early next week will be
hard to live up to.
Yeah. Well, that's the existence of the offseason. But early next week, coverage of the NFL owners' meeting. We'll have it for you here. Thanks to Chris Brown for joining us. Tasker's back next Monday. Production assistants George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rood, J.J. Torito, Kevin Cargis, James Roble, our producer, Jay Harris. Thanks to Chris Brown. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll see you Monday at 12 noon.
You
could
be
3.
Here tomorrow if you
no,
want.
No, sir. Tomorrow, 12 noon, One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.